our society conditions us to believe that we are minds that are lugging around a body, right? And that the truth is both the mind and the body are communicating stories. And often the mind and the body are not saying the same story. So in my work, I specifically use somatic experiencing, and that's a way to track the story the mind is telling, but I'm also tracking the body and what the body is communicating through understanding the nervous system.
Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of A More Beautiful Way, a podcast dedicated to slowing down and centering the sacred in our everyday lives. My name is Bethany Wilkinson. I am an author and a spiritual director, and my work in the world is helping modern people slow down and center the sacred in their everyday lives so that we can show up to our work, our families, our communities, to issues of social injustice, so that we can show up in these places in a way that is rooted, wholehearted, and sustainable. I'm so glad that you're here. Today's conversation is a fresh one. And by that, I mean over the past few weeks, or many weeks, actually, all of the episodes I've been sharing are conversations that I had between 2022 and early 2023, because I wanted to be sure to give you all of that, just the backstory, those kind of foundational conversations before launching into really a new era of the show. And so today's conversation is one of the first episodes of that new era. You've never heard this conversation before. It is with a brand new guest, and it is just so necessary. I interviewed my friend, Sharini Gobriel, who is many incredible things. She will tell you more about who she is in the actual conversation. But I interviewed her because she is a somatic experiencing practitioner. And this entire conversation is about the ways in which we in modern society are conditioned to perform, to be high achieving, and to in some ways ignore or leave the reality of our embodied experiences behind. And a lot of the healing work that Sharini has done, and a lot of the healing work that I've done in my own way, has been about coming home to the body, coming home to ourselves. And what I love is that Sharini really helps us get into the weeds of that. What does it look like? What does it mean? What role do our nervous systems play? All of these incredible pieces. So if you are a person, if you are a body, which you are, if you are interacting with this podcast, you're invited to listen in. I am so confident there is something in this conversation for you, especially if you are someone who is high achieving, if you do really thrive on being able to perform and get things done, if you're really driven and ambitious. I mean, we need this conversation more than ever. And so without further ado, you are invited to listen in as Sharini and I dive into embodiment. Enjoy the show. Well, let's dive in.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Oh, so good to see you. Good to be seen by you.
Likewise.
Well, Sharini, how about you tell us and the people, where do you begin?
Yeah. So I would love to begin a bit with my story. I think that that's a really helpful reference point for the conversation of being embodied and coming home to a body. And so I'll share some of my story. So growing up, I was conditioned to live as a high achiever, right? So I followed all the rules I was given for a successful life. I graduated with a doctorate in pharmacy at 25. I began working a dream pharmacy job. I had just started creating this conversation card game called Uncurated, and it was growing and it was being distributed all over the world. And I noticed that, yeah, I was really tired, but I was contributing good to the world. So I figured I just needed like more time management. I needed more efforting, more mindset work. And, you know, hilariously, I think about, you know, going on like YouTube in the mornings and listening to like motivational talks or like motivational things out of like the really, you know, dramatic music in the background. And it's like, get it done, get after it, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, got it done. Yes. And so, yeah, I was like, okay, if I can master my body, I'm going to get this all done. And I've done this before through my program, like my graduate program, and I got this. Well, without getting into too much detail, in 2018, I experienced what I thought was going to be a minor physical injury. You know, based on my medical knowledge, I was like, it's going to take 4 to 6 weeks to heal. Bada bing, bada boom, we're out of here. And for 2 years, I still was navigating this pain. And I tried lots of different modalities, and the pain would like go away for a bit and then come back. And it was like a very exhausting process of trying to heal. And in 2020, I got a procedure that resulted in a massive chronic pain flare. Basically, what was supposed to hit the brakes hit the gas pedal. And I ended up having to get an emergency surgery or emergency procedure 1 week before the pandemic shut down. And it did bring the pain down, but it was still incredibly debilitating and truly just felt like hell. And so because I was experiencing intense chronic fatigue and chronic pain, I ended up having to move back with my mom because I really just didn't have energy to take care of myself in the ways that I was used to. You know, if I took a shower, I would need like hours to recover from all the energy I just spent taking a shower. Like making food for myself was becoming a chore. So my mother generously, sweet, sweet angel, offered her support. And she would, you know, so kindly take care of me and cook for me while I spent most of my days laying on our childhood porch, because feeling the sun on my back would give me some relief. So, you know, this was during the early pandemic days. The world was pretty shut down. And I was pretty much living on that porch for 8 months while going every week to see different specialists to aid in a healing process. And so it was on that porch that I learned two incredibly important lessons, amongst others, but for this conversation, I'll share two of them. One lesson was that at the end of the day, I am the only one that experiences my life moment by moment. Right? And this horrible experience I'm having, no matter what support I have around me, they can't feel my experience. Right? And so as I heal, and when I heal from this and recover, I want to make sure I create a life that I enjoy living moment to moment, because I am the only one experiencing my life moment to moment. And so that was really clear to me. And then the second one was, you know, because I could do nothing else but sit on a porch, I finally gave myself like time and space to be in the present moment, right? I had this space to daydream, to stare at trees, to listen to birds, to read some poetry. And all of those experiences really helped me experience beauty that I really just had not allowed myself to slow down enough to take into my body until I hit a rock bottom that forced me to, you know? And so I knew that when I heal, I will make sure that I create a life that gives me access to these moments, so that I don't live so fast, stuck in the future or past, that I miss my life again. I feel like I knew that I was in some ways being given another opportunity to redo this.
Wow. I was taking so many notes from the offering of your story. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing that so generously.
Thank you.
There are a few pieces that I want to kind of savor for a moment. You opened with this line, "I was conditioned to be a high achiever." How did you come into that awareness? Like that this was a conditioning. Yes, it was your experience, but how did you know like this was put in me, on me, around me? Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah. You know, I think my cultural history is important in this because, you know, I'm a child of Egyptian immigrants and, you know, a lot of, and understandably so, the culture puts a lot of emphasis on like grind culture, you know, for survival. And so I knew that, you know, my parents came here to give me opportunities for a life that they wanted to offer me and sacrificed a lot to be here. Right. And so being successful meant, you know, I'm Egyptian and there's a joke that like we're all culturally conditioned to be like doctors, lawyers, pharmacists, or engineers. And so I chose pharmacist. But yeah, I think really the undertone of that is you have to achieve in order to survive this life. And so it felt like a part of my survival strategy was to make sure that I really meet all the expectations set for me. And so, yeah, that's, you know, very much my conditioning. And then I think the second part to that is, you know, high achievers are also rewarded in this society. So there's a lot of feedback coming from society of like, great job, you did it, you overcame, you're awesome, you get this salary, you get these privileges. Like society also is just constantly reiterating that your worth is linked to your achievement. And so I think my Egyptian cultural context plus, you know, American society that I was raised in really compounded to make sure that I got the message that I needed to achieve to be successful.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I'm seeing so many through lines to my own experience. And I'm probably going to be thinking about this for a while, even after our conversation, but in a different way, but similar, I think about my upbringing in a Black Southern family and how high achievement was and continues to be about survival. And I don't think I'd linked those things until you said it in that way. And I'm wondering even for those who are listening, like what light bulbs are going off for them, like, wow, like this conditioning is creating an experience that I'm having day by day, the only one in this body. And do I want this experience to continue? Do I not? And how do I resource myself for survival and thriving apart from high achievement, which is like a different question?
It's a very rebellious question.
The other thread in your story is about this chronic pain piece. And we don't have to spend too much time here, but the phrase that came to mind, and I don't know if this would even resonate with you, is would you say that that chronic pain was a bit of an initiation of sorts?
Oh my God.
Does that language resonate or tell me how that lands with you?
Yeah. I mean, I would say my health crisis was my invitation to coming home to myself. Most definitely. It is a, you know, in life, I think we have moments of rock bottom that rebirth us. And my chronic pain story is definitely the rebirth of someone invited to come home to herself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you say more about that? Like, what does coming home to yourself mean for you?
Yeah. Yeah. So it definitely was the invitation of coming home to myself, and also the process of deeply coming home to myself was facilitated by my work with my somatic trauma therapist. And for context, I had worked with two different trauma therapists during my first year of pain. And the thing was, every time we would talk about big emotional activations, it would actually throw me into a really big pain flare for a couple of days. And so one of them, you know, wisely suggested, hey, you may want to see a somatic trauma therapist because I think you would benefit from working with someone who can navigate the emotional experience, but also the physical pain, right? Because they were both being linked. My emotions were now being linked to physical pain. And so I remember speaking with the person that I chose to be my somatic therapist on our discovery call. And her website, first and foremost, resonated with me because it was like, where it's like aliveness and the ability to experience a full range of emotions and coming home to oneself. So I was like, yes to a conversation with this person. And so when I got on the phone with her, I told her about my pain experience over the last year, you know, how I wanted to come back into my body. But the tricky thing is that I needed to leave my body often, like I needed to escape it in order to tolerate my experience of pain moment to moment, right? And so I'm also scared to feel really big emotional things because it's coupled with pain. But I know that to be a whole person, you have to process your emotions. But I'm worried I'm going to end up a pain flare if I do, right? And so I'm presenting something to her that I'm like, this is incredibly complex. And I remember she listened very attentively. And then when I told her about my story, she actually said, Sharini, you've done a beautiful job staying alive in the experience, right? So she actually affirmed my strategy of dissociation, which I didn't know at the time that I was doing, but she's like, brilliant job, because that was the only way you could exist in your pain, because you are right. It would have wrecked you to stay in your body. And you are so brilliant and wise for leaving. And it sounds like now that you are healing, you want support coming back in. And her as a therapist said, I feel a yes to supporting you coming back in. And we're going to do this very slowly at the pace of your nervous system so that we don't spin you out. And also affirmed, like, you're right. You know, in order to live a full experience of aliveness, you do have to be able to experience your emotions. And what I eventually learned is there is lots of wisdom when you also connect to your felt experiences to guide you. And so I felt such a yes to working with her. And that was, you know, I think even more layers of coming home, because she also validated the brilliance of a body, you know, and how these survival tools are brilliant. The issue is if we stay stuck in them, right? And really the complexity of navigating a body and being able to differentiate, you know, your body's voice, really.
Yeah. Wow. I love that this person validated your choices, even if they were maybe unconscious, you know, like the ways our body cares for us. Yeah, that's just really beautiful. And it kind of, it like it, what's coming to mind is that it kind of disrupts any shaming that can happen, you know, like, I feel like we can be so hard on ourselves about the ways that we've survived or the ways we've coped or whatever those things might be. And to say, wow, you've done an exquisite job. Yeah. That's really liberating.
Yeah. Incredibly. Right. Because you actually can't be with the truth of a body when you're navigating shame. It becomes a big barrier to actually listen to the wisdom. And so what she did so beautifully and what she did through my therapy so beautifully is that there's really no judgment, right? That we did all of this to survive, right? High achieving is how I was told to survive, right? And we all, in some ways, right? Like your nervous systems are here to help you survive life, right? And so, yeah, it was really, really remarkable how she took that shame away from me, because I feel like in so much of the embodiment spaces and the somatic space and all that, you know, I love that everyone wants to feel their feelings, but nervous systems also cannot, we can't just go straight into feeling them. It can overwhelm us and actually spin us out. And I just happen to have a physical response through pain. And a lot of people have responses in different ways, right? But you have to move at a pace of the nervous system. And so feeling your feelings or coming back into your body is actually a very slow process and should be.
Absolutely. Can you kind of orient us to somatics? Like what is it? And then I can remind you of this question if it gets lost, but like what has compelled you to integrate somatic experiencing into your work? And so that's kind of high level jumping from your story, but I want the audience to have a sense of what we're talking about with the soma and somatics.
Sure. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So I think it's helpful. I think we all know it. And just to name it is our society conditions us to believe that we are minds that are lugging around a body, right? And that the truth is both the mind and the body are communicating stories, and often the mind and the body are not saying the same story. So in my work, I specifically use somatic experiencing, and that's a way to track the story the mind is telling, but I'm also tracking the body and what the body is communicating through understanding the nervous system. And so, like you mentioned, training in somatic experiencing, and just to speak to it, there are lots of different forms of somatic modalities. This is the one that I'm trained in, so that's all I can speak to. But yeah, in our training, you know, a high level general way is we're tracking nervous systems to really be with the truth of what they are communicating, because nervous systems are communicating what we feel in the present moment all the time. And so, you know, I think it's helpful, especially when I work with clients, you know, we can use a mind to solve problems, sure, but we miss out on lots of information from our bodies by not paying attention to their cues, right? And we can actually cause harm, like we spoke about briefly, if our bodies are living stuck in the survival mode, which is the fight, flight, freeze state, right? So if in order to reach our goal, we have to live in a survival mode, that will cause harm, right? And so, yeah, the issue with just using the mind is sometimes we end up, I did this, creating a life or even a company or a goal that we thought was going to make us happy on paper, right? But didn't. And if we listen to the early signs by tracking our nervous system, by tracking the body, we could have potentially pivoted, right? Yeah. And let's say, like, even if we are like clear, like, nope, this is the goal, this is the life I want, and it is truly in alignment with our body and our values. Again, if our nervous systems have to live in survival mode, and I, again, want to honor the nervous system, that fight, flight, and freeze are acute measures that are used for acute experiences. The issue is when it's stuck and it doesn't know how to turn off, right? And they're not long-term solutions. And as we see, when they are long-term solutions, when we continue to live in it, we experience burnout, low mood, and just lots of really poor health outcomes, right? So I think why I use somatic experiencing is because it's important to move at the pace of a body, because our bodies are telling us the truth of what we want, what we can actually handle in this moment, even if our minds are like, no, we got this, or I should, or I could, or all these things. Your nervous system is tracking the reality. And let's say we want to reach a goal, beautiful, that our nervous systems aren't at a place where they have the capacities to support you to do that. Great. Let's support the nervous system to increase your capacity so that you don't have to harm yourself in the process of reaching your goal.
Oh my goodness. I'm just thinking about back like 2017, 2018. When did we meet? It was sometime in that.
Yeah, I think 2018.
Yeah, yeah. Sometime in that 2018. And I feel like pretty much most of what I was working on, that like misalignment, that like, I don't even have all the words right now. It's just that as you were describing that, I was like, yes, I have lived that story. This goal looks so good on paper. I'm going to bypass every cue of my body to make that thing happen. And I did it and I did it and I did it until I crashed and have been slowly rebuilding my entire life since. And then I think what's so interesting is, like you said earlier, like we get praised and celebrated for bypassing the truth of our body's experiences to achieve something. And then for someone who, like myself, tends to be very motivated by external validation, like it just becomes this really difficult loop to break until my body was literally like, no more. Mm-hmm. We cannot keep going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I resonate so deeply. You know, I think that was my life before 2020. And then I had to face the reality. And when I faced the reality, I was like, oh my God, I almost missed my life. Mm. That's why, you know, living this way is a true act of rebellion. Because like you said, we are praised for the way that we used to live. We get a lot of affirmation. And, you know, people around us really support that way of being. And understandably so, you know, this is not a person, this is a systems issue. Mm-hmm. You know, so in so many ways, it's unfortunate that the body has to speak so loudly to get our attention. But I've seen this in my own story and client stories and friend stories, that it took that level of screaming, you know, from our bodies for us to really be willing to live a different life and really an invitation back into life. I'm like, oh, this juicy way of living, I almost missed it.
Yeah. Wow. When you think about your journey towards healing and liberation, and it's a journey, right? Like we're on it, we're moving in that direction. And, what would you say it's required of you? And maybe another way to ask that question is, like, what's been the cost? If there has been one, can you speak to that some?
Yeah, I would love to. So I think, like I've said, it requires a very countercultural living, right? And, you know, Trisha Hersey in her book, you know, Rest is Resistance, talks about a daily deconditioning that we have to do. Like, it is a lifetime of deconditioning. And, you know, we live in a society where our bodies and our wellness are not a priority. They're just not. You know, we live in productivity culture, and oftentimes, you know, there's a lot of shame in like having a quote unquote lazy day, right? And I still have those moments all the time, those voices that come up, because the conditioning is very strong, right? But I have to like return to my values and return to my own body and recognize that we live in a sick society that, at the end of the day, asks us to leave ourselves, our bodies, our deep knowing, to feed a system that is not going to feed us, right? It does not provide us the time, the resources, adequate healthcare for care for bodies that we exist in. you know, and it feels radical to live focused on healing and liberation. And, you know, especially, and this is the tricky part of pain, you know, especially in the first couple of years healing from pain, is I needed so much time from task to task. Like, I actually didn't really have a choice, because if I did my previous strategy, pre-2020 strategy of overriding my body, I paid a cost. And it took time, and I was in a pain flare, and the fatigue was intense. And so, I mean, in some ways, the gift was that I didn't really have a choice, but I had to be with my body and honor it. Otherwise, I would feel it on a back end. But it was because I had so much time now that I had to give myself to nourish my body and rest, that I recognize the joy that I had access now, that I could carry into my life, into the other aspects of my life. Like the ability to daydream and spend time in nature, you know, gave me so much deep, like, you know, almost existential nourishment, that I will not tolerate creating a life overriding my body again, right? It's too high of a health cost, A, and B, you end up missing your life. And so in a lot of ways, as I, you know, as the world has opened up more and more opportunities have come online, if I don't have a yes, I'm not doing it. That is very clear for me. And that's something, as, you know, a recovering people pleaser, it definitely, it's like, well, I have to do it. I have to override. This is an opportunity, right? Even that scarcity comes up around like, oh my gosh, am I going to miss my chance? Am I going to miss this opportunity? And I have to just return to my body and say, we are creating a life in alignment with the body, because I will not get to my destination the way that I once did, where I've created a life that I have to now escape from.
For people who are listening and have some degree of interest in cultivating this practice for themselves, mm-hmm. where might they begin to deepen or expand their own experience of their body's wisdom?
Yeah. So I would, you know, love to offer something that my somatic experiencing therapist offered me very early on, that I continue to use with myself and with my clients and everything. But really, how to start connecting to your body's knowing, right? And so she offered me this practice so that I could connect to my felt sense, so that I could start to recognize sensations in my body as a way of hearing what my body was communicating to me. And so in session, she would ask me like, okay, look around the room, and is there something in this room that brings you pleasure? And so let's say I saw a plant in the room. I would tell her, oh, like that plant makes me feel really happy. And she would say, how do you know you feel happy? What in your body tells you that you feel happy? And honestly, probably in the beginning, I was like, I don't know. I just feel it. And she was like, is there sensations that you can track that tell you that in this moment, staring at that is bringing you happiness? And I'm like, well, yeah, I guess I can feel like a warmth in my chest, or an exhale, or, you know, the tension I was carrying in my shoulder settled a bit. You know, so there's all these ways that we actually can connect a felt sense in the body to an emotion that we were feeling, which was like mind-blowing. I had no idea at the time. And that, I think, in order to learn your body's wisdom, you have to start bridging the connection of the mind and body by learning your body's language, right? And so I would take this practice with me, and I still do this all the time with me everywhere I go. And let's say like I'm in nature and I see like a sunset, and I'm like, oh, I love that sunset. I ask myself, well, Sharini, how do you know you like that? What in your body tells you that? Right. Or if I'm at a concert and I'm like, oh, I feel so like connected to the people around me, what in your body tells you that you feel connected? Right. And so I think that that's a really simple way to start being able to map the language of your body through your felt senses. Because then you're going to start learning, you know, maybe that's what joy in this moment feels like to me. And in another moment, it felt a bit different. And then this is what pleasure feels like. And this is what my anger feels like, you know, and you can really start to actually know what you're feeling because your felt sense is communicating to you and you're able to link that.
When I think about the past few years of my life and the role that slowing down has played in my healing, in my liberation journey, I didn't have language for it, but that what you just described has been a big part of the practice of noticing, of paying attention, of just being awake to my daily lived experience moment by moment. And it's been really empowering because once I've been able, like once I start noticing like, oh, that's really enlivening. That gives me joy. Oh, that's making me miserable. Here's how I know. It kind of helps me to start making different choices. What do I need to let go of? What do I need to tweak? Oh, these relationships, let's cultivate those. These relationships, let's let them move on out. You know, just the insight that our bodies have into the life that we uniquely are meant to live is vital. It's necessary.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Definitely. And the powerful thing, right, is that even if the mind wants to say a different story, like, no, I actually really do enjoy that. Or, oh, no, this community feels really good or whatever it is. Your body sensations are telling often a different story and they are telling the truth. Mm-hmm. So to me, it's so important to live in alignment with that truth. And you access that through, you know, your body.
Yeah. This is a question that's coming to mind just now. And so we can pass if it doesn't quite land, but what would you say to situations where the mind and the body aren't on the same page, but there's still value in both of the stories they're telling? Like, yeah. I don't know, like, is it okay to hold both stories, or maybe that's the wrong way to frame it, but, I don't know what comes up for you in consideration of that.
I think recognizing that both stories can also exist. Yeah. And in so many ways, that's the complexity, is that it's not just one story. And so I actually think we have lots of stories that are being communicated that can feel even in opposition with each other. Right? But I actually do think that there is so much value in being with the truth and not to place judgment on it, but to be curious because it's all true, right? Or it's all here, it's all present. And so in a lot of ways, trying to shut down a story is going to shut down a piece of yourself and really shutting down important information for you. And in order to like live more integrated, I think being with the reality of even contradictory stories, you know, we hold lots of contradictions within ourselves. And I think that the truth does set you free. And so being with the truth, and whether that's, you know, through support through a therapist or a friend or, you know, wherever you find the support that can hold that level of complexity, I think it's really important because it all exists, because it's all here.
It makes me think of this book I've been skimming called No Bad Parts. Are you familiar with parts work?
Yeah.
And this idea that every part of us is there for a reason. Exactly. And so even all of the contradictory stories, every story has a role to play. And the work is to be in the habit of welcoming, the practice of welcoming all the different parts to the table.
Right.
Into listening and then with support, discerning the truth.
Yeah. Beautifully said. Yeah, that's exactly. And I think like when we're in shame, right? Because if it's a part that comes up that we're like, oh, I don't want that to be true. Right. We can't actually be curious to resolve what's coming up. And so, yeah, I think as much as we can create curiosity around narratives, contradictory narratives, all of it, the more we can live these whole integrated lives.
Shereeni, when you look at the world, what are you longing for most?
I am deeply longing for people to have access to their aliveness. I want to see people connected to their vitality, you know, that vitality that animates a person. And years ago, like, I came across this quote by Joseph Campbell, which I probably have already told you because I tell every person. But the quote really resonated with me. And the quote is, "I don't think people are searching for the meaning of life as much as they are searching for the experience of being alive. I think people want to feel the rapture of being alive." And I remember that really hit me at the time and continues to, because I think if we could cognitively know the meaning of life versus actually experiencing aliveness in our bodies without knowing the meaning, I think most of us would choose the latter, you know? And, you know, in order to feel the rapture of being alive, in order to experience your aliveness, you have to live in a more regulated state in your nervous system, right? Because when we are in regulated states, we have access to the present. We can be curious. We have more access to our joy, our creativity. This is just like basic physiology, right? And these are the juicy experiences of life. And so it's why, like, I actually believe, like, regulated nervous systems are the new rich. Like, that's my new, like, measure of success. I'm like, regulate nervous systems, that's success, because it gives you access to your aliveness, right? Which is something that riches, success, doesn't always guarantee us. But, you know, we live under incredibly oppressive systems. And most of us are stuck in protective responses because of these systems. And I want to make that very clear that this is not like an individual issue. And so, you know, the burden, it's unfortunate that the burden is placed so much on an individual when this is such a systems issue, right? But yeah, you know, most of us are stuck in fight, flight, freeze, and don't know how to come out. And so that's what, you know, somatic experiencing offers, is a way to help people resolve that and come out of these states by connecting to those experiences, releasing them through lots of different modalities, and return back to a regulated state, you know? So it feels honestly like a crime that we exist in a body where the body is where we feel our aliveness, and yet this world divorces us from our aliveness. Like, that is incredibly dehumanizing and inhumane. Like, to me, like, these are like human rights issues, you know, being embodied, living in systems that support embodiment, that support regulated nervous system. These are human rights. And so to me, people living alive, you know, it's sad how far and few between I feel I get to experience it in others and societies. But I do think that that is the most radical thing, or one of the most radical things one can do in this life. And I think that's how you reclaim, in a lot of ways, your humanity and your dignity, is by reclaiming your aliveness and coming home to your body.
I'm thinking about what you said about the onus being kind of on the individual to do this, like, healing and reparative work. Mm-hmm. But what I also heard in your story and have experienced is that the healing work is also a collective endeavor. Mm-hmm. And thinking about the people who've been able to hold space for you, I know for myself, the people who've been able to hold space for me in a variety of ways, it's like we heal together, mm-hmm. just as much as we are invited to take individual responsibility. And I agree, like, golly, that it's a human rights issue. I hadn't mm-hmm. thought of it like that, but I can see the through line to that. And And when I imagine creating a more beautiful way in the world, I think it must flow from a regulated nervous system, you know? Because in my own experience, again, like trying to create the new or the more liberated or the more equitable or just future from a place of like constant or persistent dysregulation, disassociation, from that fight or flight place, it not only is it not sustainable, but I found that it wasn't really creating the types of transformation I was longing for. Yeah. And so it's kind of been like, how do I ground? How do I experience a little bit more healing so that I can show up to this work from a more spacious place? And from a more holistic and perhaps more alive place.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that that's so important and so beautifully said. And I think, you know, in both of our histories and both of our life experiences, we've tried the other way, you know, and we paid such an enormous cost and then didn't even see what we wanted to see. Right. And it turns out, I think that there is a very reciprocal relationship with your own transformation and the transformation of the world. Right. And I'm not willing to give up my well-being for the good of the world. And I think that that's actually a very powerful way to live that actually leads to transformation. That's beautifully, beautifully said. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I hope more people have access to their birthright, their aliveness.
How can the people find you, work with you? Are you taking clients? How can they just keep up with your journey? Can you share that with us?
So I have a website, www.sharinigobriel.com. So pretty easy, just my first and last name.com. And yeah, feel free to reach out to me there. You can see my work, what I'm offering. I do have some spots available. So if people are interested, I would, you know, if I feel a yes and they feel a yes, that's an important way for me to distinguish my work, is I want to be in service of the other person. And so I will always ask that we both have a full yes to doing work together. If that's online, I'd love to connect with people, and, you know, I hope people come into their bodies more and more, and also recognize that it's a process. You know, I heard this analogy of, it's like, you know, going straight into your body sometimes is like shaking a Coke or something and like twisting off the cap and it just like explodes everywhere. Like, we're not trying to like fragment people out here. Right. And so I also like want to caution people, if they feel some impulse to being more with their feelings and being more of their body, like, go slowly, be gentle, track pleasure and joy, you know, give yourself all those beautiful resources in the nervous system so that you can be with like bigger activations.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time, for your wisdom, for sharing your story with us. I will definitely link to all of the things in the show notes. So thanks, Sharini.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of A More Beautiful Way. You can learn more about A More Beautiful Way at amorebeautifulway.co on Substack, or you can find us on Instagram at A More Beautiful Way. Again, my name is Bethany Wilkinson. I'm an author and spiritual director. If you are looking for hands-on, practical space and support to embody these values of slow and sacred living, check out my offerings at www.bethanywilkinson.com. And you can also explore working with Sharini at www.sharinigobriel.com. There is support for you out here. So click the links, get what you need, and I look forward to seeing you here in a couple of weeks. Bye.